This is a production of Cornell University.
Attention, please. I call the meeting to order at 4:35 p.m., January 29th, 2013. Welcome, everybody, to a new year of University Assembly meetings. So, first thing on the agenda, approval of the minutes from Tuesday, November 27th, 2012. Is there any amendments to the minutes? I hear none. Any opposition to approval of the minutes? And the minutes has been approved for Tuesday, November 27th, 2012. We do know that there is something that Randy wants to address in the previous meeting before this one minute, and we will address that at the next meeting. We forgot to print out the minutes for that meeting. So next we have reports from the assemblies, from the executive board. Liz?
So again, welcome back everybody, or for those of us who didn't leave, thanks for coming. In any case, so just a quick recap from our executive meeting. One of the things that we touched on, we'll basically address the issue of the business of the day, which will be a discussion of committee structure and our committee appointments. But we also tried to brainstorm some of the resolutions that we wanted to sort of tackle this semester. One of those was cost of child care or child care grant subsidy, housing, safety issues on campus, and transportation, those sort of four topical areas. If you have any interest in any of those particular topics or happen to be a leader of a committee that sort of goes over those particular topics, either get in touch with us or we'll be in touch, I guess. But that's about it.
Question.
Yep.
Do you have a 30-second little brief on each, what you're thinking about in terms of housing?
So one of the issues, the first issue, cost of child care, particularly I know with grad students, it's sometimes very difficult to get a sort of a grant subsidy for child care. And because this is an issue that affects staff and faculty, I'm assuming not really a large majority of undergrads are affected by the childhood grant subsidy, but sort of looking at ways that we can lend support for adjustments to make it more accessible for a larger number of people. With regard to housing, it's sort of a two-pronged issue of off-campus housing being perhaps one of the toughest to tackle issues, primarily because Cornell does not really have full purview over off-campus housing. But it's also something that we kept hearing come up again and again last semester with regard to safety, with regard to just availability of off-campus housing. So sort of that's one issue to cover. And then on-campus housing, we heard at the leadership breakfast a lot of good things from the on-campus housing office. And one of the issues that came up that I'm particularly interested in is accessibility of graduate student on-campus housing. But I think that the off-campus housing would be of particular interest to a large number of constituencies. With regard to the safety issue, looking at a resolution to sort of put CUPD and Ithaca Police together and establish a joint area of support for college students. And I think, Joy, you said that you would be heading up that particular resolution. So if you're interested in sort of safety issues and sort of that, remember when Kathy Zoner came in, she talked about that sort of, there's a zone that surrounds Cornell where a lot of people have issues with feeling safe. And there's also just in general after hours transportation issues. And then also, the last topic was transportation. I'm sure that's a very broad topic, but in general, parking and also availability of public transit, I think, would be the shortest way to talk about that.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you, Liz. Adam, not to put you on the spot, Thank you for joining us. Do you have a report from the student assembly?
Sure. This week and in the following week, the Student Assembly University Parents Coalition, which with Representative Smith started, is going to meet. They've been looking at or doing an analysis about potential social justice requirements, which I know we're going to speak about that here as well. The Student Assembly sort of Diversity and Inclusion Committee is also going to be meeting next week to work on the student life side, not the academic side of diversity issues. Those are sort of the two main things right now. We had a meeting, but it was more of an internal meeting. It wasn't regular business of the day. Still have more updates at the next meeting.
All right. Thank you, Adam. Mitch, anything from the... Is Mitch here? Oh,
yeah.
Mitch, can you speak for the GPSA?
So we had our first meeting last week, I guess the big news out of that is that we amended our charter, although it still hasn't been approved by the important yet. We amended our charter to include field representatives, which is the non-voting membership of the GPSA, a field representative from each the Cornell Tech campus with their and also the Geneva, the Agricultural Experiment Station, Geneva, to have them be essentially full field representatives, even though they're more or less already covered by their representative field. So that's really exciting. I'm actually heading down to New York City on Thursday to meet with the new students at Cornell Tech, and on behalf of the GPSA, and I'll certainly let them know about the university. And hopefully to get them to get involved and also to let them know that the case of student activities for so the graduate students and then get money back as part of the student organization. So I'm heading down there, and then also as part of that, I'm going to meet with some of the student leaders at the Wildcom Alumni. So I'm hoping to more like help build some of those bridges between Ithaca and New York City.
Thank you, Mitch.
That's not a bridge to nowhere.
What? Tanya's not here today. Is there anybody from the employee assembly that can speak about
this?
Bridget?
We've been working, we've moved our elections up, set our timeline up, so that we can better help fill slots in the other assembly. So we've been working on that. Information is going out. We feel like we have a pretty good pool of people who are rerunning, and we will be needing to recruit a couple of people for that. Tanya and I have been working very diligently on finalizing and helping the steering committee for the employee survey to revise their recommendations. They did go to the community last week for that. And with some pretty good feedback, and we're just making a couple of final tweaks, and we're now in the process of scheduling open forums, which will be held hopefully mostly in February. So we're coming up right around the corner. And then lastly, maybe Greg can maybe give an update on some work that Tommy and Greg are doing on employee care fund brainstorming on funding.
So Joanne Brizzetti, myself, and Tanya are working to think in sort of a big picture context on how we can raise and maybe establish some sort of endowment for the Employee Care Fund, which is a fund that's open to employees and faculty. And I'm probably not going to get the words right, but in times of extreme circumstances or whatever happens and they need some extra support or assistance financially, that they can sort of apply to this pool of money and send out. We've sort of been raising money each year and then spending it, but we're trying to strategize on big picture ways that we can make this something a little bit more long-term, a little bit more lasting, and a larger pool of money over time. So just trying to think about the future.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you, Bridget. Lastly, Dean Burns, do you have anything from the Faculty Senate?
Yeah, I can tell you about the last meeting of the Metro Lieutenant, which was held on 12-12-12. Very scary to me. Just as the semester wound down, we actually passed three resolutions. We passed a resolution that allows eCornell to work on courses that will be taken for credit and get paid for the presentation of those courses, but of course they don't have any right to offer courses on their own or on their own faculty. But that's been in the works for a long time. And then we have two resolutions on the incident on Hope Plaza on November 19th between the Palestinians and the Israeli supporters. The first resolution was a resolution just saying this incident occurred. There were issues of academic freedom and freedom of assembly that have been raised, and that there are allegations of some improper conduct on the part of some of the staff. And as we've learned that the president is initiating an investigation of this, we ask him to report in public in a written statement by February 1st. So that passed fairly sizably. And then there was the second resolution, which had in fact prompted the one that I just told you about, which was a bit more stringent and said that these incidents, confrontation occurred, and that the faculty, Senate, UFC, the governing body, and myself should form an investigative committee to question the following 10 individuals about the following 8 topics, and that passed positively as well. So we are in the process. The president's report, I understand, would be delayed by the 4th, which is next Monday. The Board of Trustees is meeting right now, or will start meeting tomorrow in New York City, and so the report will be available when he gets back. And we are in the process on the faculty Senate side of appointing our investigative committee. So that was active and exciting. And then in the future, we have coming up a second of these faculty fora. I know we had one on MOOCs last fall. This one will be held on Valentine's Day and will be on the topic of the future of research libraries and whether they work with them. And that will be held in Milstein Hall at the Fulbright Conference. So, as with the last students are invited to attend. You can take a date. The refreshment categories are only for the faculty.
Thank you, Dean Byrne. Next, we have reports from the committees, starting with the Code and Judicial Committee. Greg, do you have any updates?
Not yet. There'll be an email out tonight trying to establish a date, hopefully by the end of the week, for our regular meeting. And then hopefully by our next committee meeting, we'll have something more spirited to discuss.
Okay. Next is the Campus Welfare Committee, headed by me. So very shortly about what we did last semester. We talked shortly about assessing diversity statements and syllabi on campus. We also talked about how to best address admission issues and retention issues among diverse populations and minority populations. We talked a little about what's going on campus in regards of current initiatives and course requirements for undergrad students and diversity training for graduate students, staff, and faculty. We also talked about a town hall style way of communicating with basically all constituencies about diversity and welfare on campus. And we also talked a little about childcare. Did we talk about childcare? Yeah, we talked a little about childcare. And lastly, how we're going to make long-term goals for diversity and welfare. And that's basically what the Welfare Committee did last semester.
Lastly, we have the Campus Infrastructure Committee. Bridget, do you have an update?
Okay.
It's fine.
We'll be hosting a meeting soon and get going on that.
All right. Thank you, Bridget. Next, the business of the day. We are supposed to have a representative from the Ombudsman Office. Are you by any chance?
I am.
Hi.
She is a representative.
We have Linda on the agenda, but I am guessing you
Linda
are.
I assume coming. Both Linda and Adam are coming. But in the meantime, I will be happy to do the presentation.
And what's your name?
Well, I'm Charlie Wallacott.
Okay.
And I'm the University Ombudsman. In past lives, I have presided over this organization, and I must say, I think this is a much more spectacular meeting room than 316 Day Hall. One can look out here and watch the eagles flying up Cuba Lake. But that's not what I came to talk about. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the Ombudsman's Office. And the point, the critical point is that you folks are really responsible for the Ombudsman's Office. The Ombudsman's Office is an independent part organization. And while it is true that we are paid by the president of the university, which is nice, you know, we enjoy that. But nonetheless, we are responsible to the university community. And the university community, I take it, is you folk. And so I think it's important that we appear at least once a year to report on what it is we've been doing. And I suspect that for some of you, the question might be, what on earth is an ombudsman and what does it do? And the answer is that we are a place where people with problems or issues can come and talk confidentially, off the record, and get counsel and advice. Linda Faulkson, for example, spent a number of years as the assistant judicial administrator and is well familiar with undergraduate issues. I spent a number of years on the faculty here and have some familiarity with faculty kind of issues. And Adam Kleinberger is a new member of the group, but he is an expert in mediation and also has a degree from the Barnum and Bailey Clown College, which is not necessarily required for an ombudsman.
No, sorry, we started a little early.
So, welcome.
If you, it would be more comfortable, you guys can
there's
seat.
And there's food over there, too. So,
so the Ombudsman's Office, as I say, is independent, which is we're not part of human resources, we're not part of any other tentacle of the corporate octopus. We report directly to the university community, namely you. We are neutral, that is, we don't take sides in arguments. We are informal, that is, we do not participate in formal processes, but we're familiar with them, and so we will help people file grievances, we will help people with any of a variety of issues that they may bring to us. And finally, we're confidential, which means that although the three of us talk about visitors and their issues, nothing goes outside the office. And that means I can't give you all sorts of gory battle tales from what we've been doing. But I can tell you that we serve staff, we serve faculty, and we serve students. We see about 250 to 300 cases a year. You've all received our annual report, which has more details than I'm going to give you. But it's a substantial number of people. And you say, well, what kind of problems do you see? We see a lot of staff problems which have to do with supervision, problems between people and their supervisors of one sort or another. We see people who are trying to file grievances of one sort or another. And then we see problems which are kind of structural problems, you might say. And here I can give you a specific example. We've had a graduate student here who said that he was given a National Science Foundation graduate fellowship
which was very nice. It paid for his graduate education. But what he failed to realize was that the Internal Revenue Service had a great interest in this because some of these fellowships are taxable. And he thought it might be nice if somebody had told him ahead of time that this was taxable. And he gave me permission, not using his name, but he gave me permission to reveal his case. And so I had conversations with a variety of people, like the bursar, who said, well, I think that's the graduate school's responsibility. And I talked to the graduate school, who said, you know, I think that's the bursar's responsibility. And so, as ombudsman, we have gradually agitated, and I think we have actually got both parties to agree that they both have some responsibility here. And that's one of the things we do. When we see that there are problems of a systemic sort, we report them to the administration and try and get something to happen about them. And so we report up, but usually anonymously. That is, we just have detected that there's a problem with graduate fellowships. We don't say, you know, graduate student Jones appeared on our doorstep weeping and wailing, and that's why I'm here. It's staff, faculty, and students. Faculty, a variety of problems, sometimes to do with tenure, sometimes to do with other matters. Students, again, a variety of problems, sometimes grades, sometimes a whole host of other issues. And we try very hard to be helpful. One of the problems, I think, that the Ombudsman's Office has had for years is kind of typified when I became Ombudsman. People would say to me, oh, Charlie, you're an Ombudsman. What's that? And so one of the things we've tried very hard to do is to publicize the office and try and make it a little bit more obvious what it is we do. And Adam Blessing has updated the website. We have produced a new brochure, and I suspect we might have some copies of that to hand out to everybody, just to give you an idea of more specifically what we do. We sent postcards this year to all the faculty and staff of the university, and we sent emails to all the students. And this resulted in a substantial increase in the number of hits on the website, about a twofold increase, and a certain increase in the number of visitors that have appeared on our doorstep, which is, after all, exactly what we were hoping for. And we hope to continue this outreach with an occasional email and probably with some posters. We were told that that might be a more effective way of reaching undergraduates to have posters around on the bulletin boards and so on. So we're looking into that. And so finally, what's ahead? Well, one of the things that we need to do is to update our charter. Our charter was drawn up in 1969. You may remember that was a year of some adventures around here with the Willard Strait takeover. And the Ombudsman's Office grew out of that difficulty and was founded on the basis of a series of not resolutions, but it was really resolutions done by Fred Kahn. And the charter has not been changed since. And so it contains a number of interesting things, like we are the place to consult if there are rumors. And so we are going to take care of rumors. And there are a variety of things of that sort, which really are non-things that we do. And furthermore, we would like to bring it into compliance with the International Ombudsman's Association tenets, which I just told you at the beginning, and be clear about that. And so we're all hard at work on rewriting this, and when we get a draft, we'll have to bring it to you, and it will be up to you to decide whether you like it or not. And that will be your decision, because I think really it makes sense for you to be the governing body. And then it may be that it has to be okayed by university councils, so you don't get sued or whatever. So that's my report, and I'm happy to answer any questions. And we have the experts who do the hard work right here at the head of the table. Yes.
Yeah, thank you. I actually contacted you a couple months ago about asking whether your office helps with housing.
Yes.
And thank you for your question. That is actually spurred my question. If someone comes in with, do you get any students today who come in with things that your office can't help with, whether they're too minor, whether they're best dealt with, depending on how to play for me?
Would you want to answer that?
Well, I think it's a good question. We help with basically anything that someone wants help with, but we're not so much figuring out for you, here's what the solution is. I mean, sometimes people don't know about a policy or a protocol or what office to go to, but most of the time, you don't really know of the various options which one you want to push, and so you want a safe place to come talk about it. So, you know, in the housing arena, do you want to talk to the person who's in charge of housing, or do you want to, you know, make a different request? You certainly want a safe place to think out loud about which way you want to go. And that's really what we're about. And I've been at this now for 5 years, and the more I do it, the more I realize, you know, part of the senior tradition is somewhat complicated. And so when someone comes in with a particular problem, often it's related to other difficulties that one's facing, and so we try to sort of look at individually what is going on and be helpful in that. So the housing problem might be related to something else. I don't know if I'm answering. But what I'm getting at is, because of confidentiality, we can't exactly say what the problems are, except to say that they're employment related or academic related or administrative kinds of things. But they're very sticky situations and generally pretty complex, and sometimes as a health manager or people who are coming to see us in the first place. Sometimes they're easy, we're happy to take risks on them too.
Any other questions from the University Assembly? Randy?
No, is there any kind of problem that has been going away and some kind of problem that could be on that trends?
Yeah.
It's not so interesting to me to look at the numbers in our report, but we feel that we need to provide them because we should know about our business, and we have more about the communications in the area, and we have the constituencies in the common area. This past year, I wouldn't say the projects that are going the way of coming, but we did see many fewer undergraduates for whatever reason, and many fewer graduates, which is one of the constituencies that they hire. I'd say every year we see a disproportionately high number of employment cases, and that's a big part of our business. I think the ups and downs of the different problem areas, I don't relate it to any particular thing that's happening in the industry, so I don't know if that's the
I've been to my office enough. I can't answer that.
One thing that states to say, and you know, we were working on the guidelines as Charlie said, and we were looking back at some old annual reports today, and I think it's safe to say that some problems, you know, were true in 1980 or 1970, and there's some where, you know, folks may have trouble with someone they work closely with or whatever else. Certain problems probably never go completely away because kind of who we are.
Well, and people are working with people, so yeah. You can have a supervision problem, and that's what it is. Not always.
Yes.
Any other previews, I guess, to the charter changes other than rumors and that sort of thing? Like anything about tackling online
cyberbullying
or anything like that?
So the charter, it's existed as Charlie said, since 1969, and it's a sort of general, it's a charter guideline statement of what we do, which is essentially to help people who are having any conflict dispute issue within the university and to provide sort of upward feedback and recommendations to the extent that we see kind of generalized issues that would help the university. And historically, and we're just looking at other annual reports to sort of help us with rewriting the guidelines, we've adhered to the four tenets of confidentiality, impartiality, neutrality, and independence. And so the core principles of the charter remain, but there's language in it that is not consistent with our current practice and has affected us for many years in terms of the rumor mills and doing investigations and handling records and that sort of thing. We are very much compliant with the International Opportunity Association standards, and so we don't, those are more functions of say healthcare ombudsman or other kinds of ombudsman, but not organizational ombudsman. And so we're omitting those kinds of references from the charter, but we're keeping what's remarkable is keeping the core vision that Professor Crump had in 69 that very much is consistent with what we're talking about.
Do you guys have a timeline as to when the revision of the charter will be available to the University Assembly? And also, will the office be available again to talk a little to the University Assembly about the changes that you guys have made, the old versus the new?
Yeah, I mean, what we envision giving the draft and the covering letters, so we're talking about what we're omitting and what we're adding,
mm-hmm.
Definitely this semester, I would think you might be able to come to this maybe one week or sometime. So, we have enough time. We're hoping that you can wait in this semester.
That sounds good to the assembly, right? Okay, mm-hmm. Sorry.
Is there February does. Please don't wait till May.
Are there any more questions from the assembly? All right. Thank you, Charlie, Adam, and Linda.
Thank you.
Thank you
so
much.
Oh, yeah, and the pamphlets are very nice. Thank you.
Yes. I don't know if you should leave it frustrated. That would make me call you a lot.
I like the
postcards,
too. I thought those were nice.
If you have any bright ideas on how to reach the community and explain what it is we do, please feel free to share them, because I think a lot of people who could use us don't know that we exist. And as I said, we're a safe place to come and have a conversation.
Can I just provide an idea on that level?
Yeah.
I encourage you guys to, both Adam and I are president of the GPSA and NSA, respectively, and it might be great if you guys kind of make a 5-10 minute presentation, and then, more or less the folks that join us in our meetings are relatively good liaisons to their own programs, to their own friends, and that might be a good way.
I'd be happy to do that. If you would just invite me, I will come with bells on.
I think also your poster idea was very, I think, very salient. And also I know that the EA has had a fairly successful use of the TV monitors that are around. And so you might find that as a helpful
resource. Well, how do you thought about that?
Yeah.
That's an interesting idea.
Like the monitors in the campus dorm.
Right. Yeah, and the libraries.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the residence halls, too.
Mm-hmm.
Quick question. I know you do the new employee training. Is there anything that you do during the orientation process or any other sort of new constituent introductions? Any sort of thing similar to what you do with employees, or is the employee sort of presentation one of the more comprehensive ones that you do?
Do we do it with students?
Yes.
Orientation?
Yeah.
We haven't done that.
No, okay. New faculty either.
Okay.
They won't let us in to do that.
I'm sure the grad student orientation would let you.
Yeah.
in the front door, as it were.
Yeah. Anyway, if you have bright ideas, please let us know.
Yeah,
and thank you so much.
Thank you again for coming.
Thank you.
Next, we have a discussion on the committee structure. I think Liz, do you want to
have that? Yeah. So, this is a very, I recognize, first of all, that this is a very broad title to a very complicated discussion. But I would say that the 3 points that we wanted to sort of address is, first of all, we have, and Ned, you can back me up on this. We have lots of vacancies on a lot of our committees. We also have vacancies on this general body, like with the faculty and that sort of thing. So that's one problem we wanted to start talking about. And also, we wanted to, instead of just talking about the lack, we also wanted to try to think about solutions for the future. And one of those would be to ask folks to have their, and by folks, I mean the assemblies, to have their committee appointments by the end of the semester. So, for instance, the EA has really been on, really been on top of that by moving the appointment schedule up. And I think that the other assemblies, the SA and the GPSA, might follow that sort of an example with, well, I think the GPSA to a certain extent does that with the UA appointing before the end of the semester. But I don't know if the SA does, and I definitely think that any members of the faculty, we would strongly encourage that sort of a discussion at the faculty senate level, since faculty seem to be particularly absent from many of our committees. So if the various assemblies could move that schedule up by appointments at the end of the semester, that way they're not scrambling at the beginning of the semester to find people to be on our committees and just in general be on the general body. I don't know if you guys can think back a few months, but we did have a lot of absences on those first couple of meetings. And if people aren't showing up until a month in, it's harder to get a committee appointment. The other idea, and again, I recognize this is kind of my shtick, but is the communication with the assemblies and advertising with the assemblies. I think for the UA, it's very important for us to schedule a time at the various assemblies to physically, some of the officers come and make a presentation about what the UA does at the assemblies. I recognize this is also part of a larger systemic issue of involvement at the assembly level, but I think if, tell your friends when you're going to the assemblies and tell them that you're on the UA and talk about what it's about. Peer-to-peer is a very good strategy for recruitment, but just in general, more formal presentation. So that's the background. For the essence of this particular meeting, one of the topics of discussion is how do we address the issue of people attending, or not attending, but being appointed to the general body as well as committees, and also just getting a feel for ways that we can address increasing participation at the committee level and at the general body level going forward.
The speaker list is now open. If anybody...
Mitch? Maybe it would be also good for Ned to just apprise us of absence. Do you...
I don't have those right now, but they, along with what she was saying, one of the things that Ari and me were discussing is... towards the end of the year here, that I would come to the meetings of each of the assemblies to help with, fulfill, and let you guys know I'm there to say, let's get membership for the committee. So that was one of the my task items to say, maybe there to just help and say, while you're doing it, don't forget, These are vacancies if you're interested in doing it. Let's go. So, like you said, there's vacancies across the board, but different assemblies have had better, done a better job filling some of them. And it's not easy. I mean, there's people are pulled all different ways, so I'm not. It's a concern in that you want to do stuff that's you need people to do.
I should piggyback on that just a little bit. So in the sense that people are pulled different ways, one of the issues I can speak personally from the Campus Welfare Committee is that people, so we started meeting, let's say, halfway through the semester after the September or whatever date, and closer to October, actually, if we can, again, think back to those meetings. But people by then had already made their semester commitments. So fitting another committee into their schedule wasn't working for them, and so they actually dropped the committee. So we went down from, let's say, six people to three or four. Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to monopolize
the
floor. But Mitch.
I just wanted to just to present the reality of certainly GPSA. You know, each year we have to we usually do it within the first 2 to 3 weeks of school, ask our community, which is incredibly difficult to get the word out to, to fill around 9,400 spots on committees. And that ranges from our own committees, that ranges from university assembly committees to, the state president's council on women. We do have a lot of committees. And, the reality is, and I'm not making an excuse or anything, but the reality is, if we don't fill them in that first round, they usually get kind of pushed aside. And I think it is worth the University Assembly really making strong connections with those members of the individual assemblies that do staffing. Now, in the GPSA, technically, after that first round, it's our executive committee who does the staffing, but typically it's our VP of Ops. And so I think it makes more sense in terms of membership to reach out to my VP of Ops. Granted, again, I could do that same thing, and I should do that same thing, and I recommend that, but I think it would make sense for the university company to develop those relationships. I know, I think, than Melissa, so your staffing, so she's been involved in UA before, and I feel like everyone knows that. But I think that would make a lot of sense in looking forward. Again, I'm not trying to develop myself the responsibility of not filling more of the graduate spots, but that probably would be a better, more sustainable option.
To clarify, then, making the appointments before the end of the semester? Is your argument? Or
I mean, just in general. I think if we can't fill like that first round, that the leadership of the university assembly should, instead of badgering me and Kyle as the graduate reps, again, I abandon it, to really reach out to Eric as our VP of Ops and say, hey, we have these positions we need to be filled. And he's the one who does this.
I think after the first round of emails, that was our approach. But in general, I think one of the – so your point is that you have we have 92 positions to fill. The university assembly, I think one of the suggestions we're just making is to follow the model of the EA, which is to make appointments before that rush of those first couple of weeks in the school year. So – Adam, then Greg.
We can definitely try to do that. I just think it's less, student schedules are a lot more volatile in terms of classes, in terms of extracurricular, and or maybe not, but correct me if I'm wrong. But a lot, like there's some semesters where students will have no idea what they're doing in the fall. They're going to be abroad in the fall. If they're going to be just what their plans are. So a lot of students, at least faculty on the undergraduate level, are hesitant to commit to extracurricular activities, so far in advance. It's possible for some committees. I would say the only committee on the SA level that actually has an overwhelming amount of interest every year is our appropriations committee. That's the only one which I can, without question, have a wait list for. And we can try to do that, and I know, and I'll, with whoever the new internal operations and Melissa, she's connected, we'll make sure to include that in the process. But I also know it's going to be tough because we have a problem. We start recruiting in, late April, early May, and it's tough to fill that, especially because the new leadership only takes over, at the beginning of the fall.
Great.
You said there are 92 positions to fill?
No, GPSA.
Oh, for the GPSA?
Yeah.
So how many positions are we talking that we need to fill? What's our number? Or what's the breakdown of our number?
Are you get that off the top of your head?
8 to 12, depending on the constituent assembly. So 2 for each of the three standing committees, and then 3 to 4 UN members.
Depending on the assembly?
I'm confused. I'm sorry. So we have what, three committees? Three standing committees?
We have three standing committees with 2 appointments per committee. And then the general body is comprised of 2 to 4 representatives from each assembly.
And there's 2 to 4 UA voting members on that committee as well.
So all you smart people in the room, how many questions?
Where are our math plates?
So 10 to 15.
Yeah,
10 to 20. 10 to 20 people on a committee.
Okay. So at minimum, it's 30.
Yep.
At a minimum.
Yeah.
Should we beg the question, is that too high? And, you can't leave people to drink. You know what I mean? and I know that's a fundamental question, but if you have 3 people who are really excited about a cause, and the faculty want to get left out, that's their choice if they're not filling a seat. And I'm just using the faculty as an example, but if there's people who are eager to come to a table from a constituent group, then by all means, I know we have responsibility to the entire community, but I also think that there's also a responsibility that has to inherently be placed on the representing constituent group or the one that's up to sending people to get involved. I don't see a way where we can pull them in and say, you've got to get involved. I think we're maybe asking the question, what's the best way to engage them and make it exciting and enriching and them to want to get involved, I think is one of the questions we need to ask. But I also don't think we should stop the momentum because somebody doesn't buy a ticket.
And if I can, I think one of the points of confusion at the beginning of the semester was, well, can we proceed even if our committee is not full? Like, if we only have 2 people on a committee, can we proceed? So.
Is that a point of parliamentary procedures that we can clarify?
I would.
Jim?
So, I understand the desire to have 100% manning in the committee. It's never going to happen. You know, when there's something that happens on this campus that matters to campus, people show up in spades. They have sit-ins, walk-ins, they show up wherever they need to be. There is nothing in our charter that says a committee of 2 can't meet and conduct business. The committee can disclose the decisions they're making to the larger body, and the president and our executive board has membership with the other executive boards, and they're smart enough, and everybody's smart enough to go, hey, there was nobody at the subcommittee from the employee assembly, I'm going to run this by them before we sign it out to President Scorton. We conduct business. The people who haven't given us people know they haven't given us people. They feel bad about it. There's all kinds of reasons. If that subcommittee starts dealing with an issue that really matters to them,
their community will show up, they will show up as the acting, they will appoint somebody when they need to. So we should conduct business, we should vet what we can, and we shouldn't hesitate to send things forward with half a committee, a third of a committee, a full committee, because when it matters, they will show up. And we all know discrimination, harassment, violence, hot button topics, cyberbullying, we want to engage them. If it's we don't like the number of lighting on a bike path, you know, people come, they don't come. So we cannot be afraid to do business. Everybody knows their responsibilities. Let them carry out their responsibilities. Their own constituents will yell at them if they going, well, how come this committee, we don't have anyone in this committee, we didn't know about this. You know, so in other words, I think you've done reasonable and diligent attempts to get committees. You need to let them know that we're not happy that the seats aren't filled. If you think university-wide that there is not enough involvement in campus governance, then you need to send a resolution to President Skorton that the committee structure is faltering in its ability to do its job because there isn't enough broad-based support. But the fact that the infrastructure committee is half-staffed, the codes and judicial is missing all its faculty members or whatever, isn't relevant. You do business, and you know there's how you would want it to be, and there's how it is, and you conduct business, and when you have a topic that is you know really big, and you haven't had a commitment from the faculty senate at the subcommittee level, then you forward it to them for comment before you have the vote to send it up. I mean, there's ways to mitigate the fault. I do think it could be wise, smart to try and move up appointment schedules. I think that maybe that could be a useful tool. But from the standpoint of moving forward or holding, not meeting and conduct business because don't have the people we're supposed to have, you know, they have to self-organize. Let them do it. They'll play catch-up when it matters. And they have full access to our minutes. There are members here from each of the boards that can go, hey, you know, are you aware of this? This sounds like something we'd want to be interested in. So there are plenty of fail-safes to make sure the communities get talked to. So unless you think there's so little support from the university that you need President Skorton to or Tommy Bruce to really force the issue with some of the key people, conduct your business and at the beginning of the year you're drumming up business, but you know by the end of the first 6 weeks, move on.
Well, can we get that in writing then?
It's not in writing. There's nothing in our thing that says we have to have fully staffed committees to do business. The there are rules that say the people there constitute a quorum as long as it's so many members where it's relevant or not. And
we didn't have quorum. Sorry. Ari?
The other part
would you like to be on the speaker system?
Concerned about the year's progress is, in addition to having committees that are not fully staffed, there aren't really any resolutions coming forward for committees to act on. And I wanted to clarify one thing. I don't know if this was clear to everybody from the start, but the way resolutions happen, the way all the business of the assembly happens is voting members of the assembly. Everybody else is saying that. Introduce a resolution calling for something to be done. Now, I'm sure everyone here has reason issues that caused them to volunteer for campus service in the first place. The next step is finding out who's responsible for those issues on campus. Come to our offices, we need help figuring out who those people are, talking to them, and then bringing forward a proposal. There are a lot of administrators on campus who might already be trying to do some of the things you're interested in doing, who are, if you approach them and say, I want to bring a resolution to the UA, it will give you all the bullet points you need to ratify and bring forward. Now, I wonder if part of the reason that we've had so much difficulty getting the committee meeting is because there haven't been any resolutions introduced in the assembly for them to discuss. I'm hoping we can do something like that.
I know ways to mitigate that.
And I don't think that that's something either that President, sorry, but I don't think that's something that
No, but participation in campus governance. They can certainly be an advocate for that if we need them to be. I think we have plenty of participation. I think it's not, we don't have our roles filled, but if you have a chairman of a committee, like say Codes and Judicial Committee, they know what they need to deal with, and if nobody comes to their meeting, well, they set the agenda and they can inform the other people, this is what I'm going to take up, and I would love to have your your support on it, and you know, they'll sponsor the resolution directly to the University Assembly so that they're the subcommittee directly, because the subcommittee is really a committee of one. In other words, manning is, we need to do reasonable, prudent steps to try and get things manned, but at some point, you got to move on. And if nobody's going to man it, then they don't see the value in it. And if nobody's going to generate some value, then they're right not to waste their time. You know, if there's no resolutions or issues, we all believe there are, but if nobody's clamoring about it, then each year and each semester is different. I mean, it really is. Last year we spent all this time on Title IX. Nothing has come forward that I'm aware of. I just came from a policy advisor group. The reg that's supposed to incorporate all those processes still not come forward. You know, we're all ready for it. We've changed our campus code for it. We jumped through hoops last year to get it through. And now the simple part, we were told, for some reason, apparently isn't so simple, and has not come forward. But nor is an explanation of why it hasn't.
We don't know what it is?
Nope. I know there are people who do. I do not. And I would think that the Codes and Judicial Committee would follow up, but if they've met, I am not aware. I know we have a person, but maybe they've met now. I'm supposed to be honest, and I don't think I've missed an invite, but if I did, that's where I would bring it up. If we don't meet soon, I will bring it directly to this body that we need to ask that office, where is it, and why hasn't it come forward? You know, so that we can follow up on last year's business. Employee Assembly, I know, is following up on the employee survey and all that stuff. Everything was moving forward, and then it got all sent back to them. You know? Okay.
It's very exciting.
Good.
I too was very, very frustrated with the whole process.
So I think things are happening. I think the key business is being done. I think there's more to discuss, but if they're not going to bring it, we have to constantly educate people. We have to constantly try and fill seats. But at some point, we just do what we can with who we have, and if we get it wrong, they'll come. You know, I guarantee you they'll show up if we pass a resolution and everybody, what? Oh, well, okay.
Jim, did you have anything to say? Greg? Sorry, Jim.
Sorry, Jim.
Sorry, Greg.
what if we set some sort of deadline or date for the representative assemblies to sort of step, and then if they don't meet that deadline, whatever that's agreed on, that the UA sort of take it and say, you know, we'll do our best to reach out to members of that constituent group and just staff it. You know, if you send what you can. Which can't get, then as a university assembly committee, it's up to the university assembly to find representatives from the university to sort of fill those spots, and not, you know, say if it's not done by the second or third week of the start of the semester, we'll just do it for you, and it's out of your hands. And if you want to volunteer somebody, they'll have priority. But you know, you snooze, you lose, and you know, I don't know. Or if seats aren't being filled, maybe we start to, after a period of time, if there's so many seats not filled by certain constituent groups, they start to lose seats, and it gets reshifted or broken down. You take it away, and people want to show up. It's the mentality, you do something big and bold, they're going to come run. So, I don't know. Just crazy ideas, discussion.
Liz and then Bob in Burma.
Well, I always have follow-ups, so I'll just shut up.
I think that's sort of what I was initially, thank you for putting it so concisely, but that was initially sort of my sense of what would be helpful. The current
And Ari, correct me if I'm wrong, or Ned, correct me if I'm wrong, the current charter sort of endows Ned with the ability to put people on committees.
Yes, it does.
But it doesn't specifically, like you're saying, proceed without those appointments. So a very small clarification, I think, would be immensely helpful. The other point that I think is it's very also very important to note is that we did have people, at least on the Campus Welfare Committee, we did have people signed up for the Campus Welfare Committee, but unfortunately, because it was, you know, beginning of October, half the people who had signed up had already had other commitments, like I noted before, and had dropped out. So I think that it's not that there's a massive lack of necessarily interest in these committees so much as the timing of the committees this year was off, and so therefore we're running into these issues. Bob?
Yeah, maybe I could say something about the Senate, Faculty Senate, and what goes on there. Joe is here, but I emailed him and we had a go around about the staffing. And it turns out that, there is a standing committee of the Senate, which is the nominations committee. And it turns out they're meeting tomorrow. So Joe is going to put it on their schedule. Those are the folks that do the nominating. So it doesn't really come from the group. It comes through that nominating committee. And that's how I was recruited. So what the heck? I knew they did it at one point, but somehow this year it never appeared. They didn't even try. And so I put it to Joe. Is it their responsibility? He said, yeah, it's their responsibility. And so we'll see what happens tomorrow. But I think getting somebody in the time frame of this spring for next fall is certainly very much easier for the faculty, because the faculty knows where they're going to be much more than especially undergraduate students do. So the ideas are all, you know, we communicated them, and I'm hoping that Joe can stir the pot a little bit in that nominating committee. Because, see, they also nominate for all sorts of other things as well. So they know who's available, who isn't available, and they got a lay of the land. I mean, you know. So it isn't just simply saying, hey, you want to be it. Joe is also on the schedule in the Senate meeting for 5 minutes, announcements from the Dean of Faculty, and he'll make an announcement having to do with that in his regular slot. And that's appropriate because he's Dean of Faculty. But of course, the meeting of the Senate is there's no January meeting, so it's February. So it'll be a little while before that happens.
All right. Thank you, Bob. Any further comments? Adam?
We will definitely make sure for this coming year to put more of an emphasis when we do
I'm working on a committee outreach plan, and part of it is just make sure that that process happens faster and that we can stop the students a lot sooner and make sure that you guys get members earlier on. So, that should be helpful.
Thank you. Jim?
What is it that you would like to have done? Are you looking for a bylaws change that says staffing will happen by March of each year, and then assemblies are expected to validate that staffing in the first 2 weeks of the following year and replace anything that's happened over the summer, or you know actually confirm their slates in the first 2 weeks? Are you trying to make a change to our charter or our bylaws, or how would you want to institute this, or is it just a friendly amendment?
I think we're not looking for a change in the bylaws, but if it comes to that, we might need to consider it, because right now I think all the committee chairs can agree that we really don't feel like 2 to 3 people is enough to form a reliable committee. So this is more of a talk just to see what we can do about the situation that's been going on for the past semester. And we hope to maybe help each constituent and constituency and each assembly to help think about what they could do to help
better staff the committees next semester.
So, next year, to just answer your question. And again, I think one of the reasons why we're running into this is because of timing. And I think, again, not to beat a dead horse, but I think that the EA's way of making the appointments earlier on seems to have caused a great trickle down from our perspective, or trickle up, however you want to think about it. In any case, so just the first point was asking the assemblies, and Adam, thank you for that, to make an earlier effort. I know I was recruited early on in the GPSA, and that's one of the reasons why I made time to be here, right? So earlier on appointments, and secondly, clarifying in our perspective when we just go, no matter how many people are on. And another issue is we had problems getting UA members on some of the committees. Mm-hmm. And in order to have a chair of a committee, generally you have to have a UA member, so somebody sitting at this table on the committee. So those were the three points.
If you're looking for affirmation, I think just seeing the heads around the room, if you want to propose a staffing deadline this term or to try and move it up, I think you have a sense of the committee that we support that. You know, I don't know how it needs to be codified.
Exactly.
But I mean, Ari can help think about that and advise us on how we might need to codify that or what we might need to do. The second thing would be for your consideration, and this is off the wall, but if there's one person from each assembly on the subcommittee, I think it should be able to move forward and meet. And if it doesn't have at least one from each of the assemblies, that they incorporate their agenda, they come meet with whoever they got, and they incorporate their agenda in the report that we do at these meetings, and we give them permission to move forward with that issue, or solicit somebody, and the vice chair can go, you're a faculty member, I need you to join this committee for this issue until somebody is appointed regularly, and go forward and conquer, or we'll take it. A potential thought. And so that would at least give some standard to moving forward independently versus dependently with this body.
Okay. Any more comments? Now we have some time for open discussion.
Thank you guys for all of your comments, and also bearing with us while we did a little bit of navel gazing, as it were. I'm full of great metaphors.
Good
thing. I don't even know what
she said. Navel gazing.
Contemplating your navel. It's an anthropology term. Very official.
Sorry. The floor is open for any other discussion topics other than navel gazing. I see no discussion topics. I move to adjourn the meeting. The meeting is adjourned at 5:43 p.m.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.